Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Thank you very much, Mr. Christopher Fritchie and the Gentleman of the Bad. What a great way to begin our morning. Hello, everyone. Hello. And how about the stage? It's so beautiful. Yeah. This was from the One Heart Choir concert that just took place, and I believe the hearts were created by the members of the choir, facilitated by Catherine Jurek, which I think is just beautiful to look at. So thank you for sharing that with us. And why don't we share a hello with each other? Perhaps you can reach around, say hello, greet somebody, and welcome them to the center. Thank you very much. Won't you join me in reading the affirmation for this month? It's up on the screen. I promote diversity and inclusion, short and sweet and powerful and good. These are very challenging times, and these are also very amazing times. Terrible things are happening in our world, and at the same time, beautiful and awe-inspiring things are happening in this world. That's the way of the world. It includes and must. It includes everything possible. We call it the realm of effects, or the world of physical manifestation. That's what we call it. And our teaching, along with many other mystical teachings, advises us that although we live in this world and we must deal with it, although we are in the world of physical manifestations, we would be wise to take our guidance from the spiritual realm, where truth is one and undivided. And so many times, in so many ways, we have been advised, be guided by love, be guided by acceptance, follow the path of inclusion, follow the path of kindness. Help. Don't harm. And yet, here we are again. Another shooting in another synagogue. And just on Easter Sunday morning, while we were here celebrating, half a dozen coordinated bombs blasted up and killed over, I think, over 200 and something people in Sri Lanka, in churches and hotels. It's been difficult to wrap my head around it all. You know, the number of people, especially that so many of them are children. I tend to go numb and slip into avoidance. I don't want to deal with it. So when that starts to happen in me, what I do is, instead of going numb, I try to read as many articles about it as I can, news articles. I'm not looking for the gory detail. I'm looking for something that will help reconnect me to oneness. You know, one article stuck out above the rest. It reported how Muslims in Sri Lanka called a day of fasting on this past Thursday in solidarity with their Christian and non-Christian friends who had died, or those who are suffering unbearable pain of loss. And one Muslim group created a meme on social media that said, if you blow up their churches, we will open our mosques for them to pray. Yeah. You know, and I latched onto that. I focused in on that as a reminder for me. Don't let fear cause me to contract and shut my doors. Don't let what is happening in the world of effects cause me to forget the spiritual truth of oneness. And the article said something very interesting. It commented on the nature of terror, saying that terror at its heart seeks to divide. And I had to remember that, don't go there. It tends to create phases of grief that ferment to anger, and then for this anger to unleash cycles of violence that take innocent lives. I had to remember, don't ferment. Instead of letting terror take its path, some Sri Lankans are coming together so as not to let terror have its way. And you know, something similar happened in New Zealand recently, you know, when a shooter killed Muslims in Christchurch. And the New Zealand spiritual community responded with the same open the doors response. The Archbishop of Canterbury called for Christians to attend Friday mosque services with their Muslim friends. Yeah, and he said it was a rejection of hatred. This was his exact message. He said, as Christians, we are called to be good neighbors. So let's get behind a simple act of kindness and reject Muslim hatred, hatred of Muslims. Now, the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, were neighbors to the mosque where it all happened. And what they did, they threw their doors open. They provided a chapel for their neighbors to use for their 5 times a day prayer all week. They gave open access to their facility. And the president of that church said that the relationship between the communities had always been respectful and friendly in both directions, and that they treated each other with kindness and helped each other out whenever they could. And they communicated in a way that showed mutual harmony and goodwill. So going back to that article I read about the situation in Sri Lanka, it said something very important. At least it was for me. It said, promoting love alone will not foster good, sustainable communal relationships unless it is accompanied by tangible systemic interventions that address communal trigger points that could contribute to ethnic or religious tensions. And then this is the part that I really hooked onto. However, showing love, empathy, and kindness is as good a starting point in a national crisis as any. And I wanted to add to it quickly. If we don't start with love, empathy, and kindness, we might not have the results we were hoping for. Our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, expressed it beautifully. It's actually written on the bulletin in the top right-hand corner in the square if you want to read it later. He said, if our human reactions are to mean the most to us, we must sense that there is hidden within and around and through each of us a divine presence manifesting itself in infinite variations. It's the same love. It's the same life in all of us. And you see that word, sense? He said, we must sense it because we can't always see it with our physical eyes. We have to sense it means we have to look with spiritual vision, because what we see in this world is not all there is to reality. And beyond what we see, beyond the otherness that we perceive, is a spiritual reality in which we are undivided. And coincidentally, that's what this month has been all about. That's what our theme is today. True inclusion, beyond otherness, being radically welcoming so that we may sense the divine presence in all. So as I've been preparing for this, I've been reading a series of articles in an online magazine in the UK. It's called Metro. And the series of articles is My Label and Me. And it talks about the experience of people who have labels applied to them that are not accurate and sometimes hurtful. And you know what the problem with defining people by labels is, the problem is that it flattens out the complexity of who we actually are. Maybe you've been labeled by somebody without your agreement or without permission in an inaccurate way. I know I have. And today I'm thinking about how I do that to others. What labels have I used to describe whole groups without their agreement, without their permission, and without the willingness to look beyond otherness to the spiritual truth? One of the articles is about Karen Kwan, born in Malaysia of Chinese ethnicity, and she grew up in the United Kingdom from age 11, and so as a result, she speaks flawless English, and she did not become aware of the problem with labels until she went to school. You see, the problem is she's very light-skinned and doesn't fit into the label Asian. She doesn't look right. She was told that she couldn't be Asian, that she had to find another way to describe herself because others needed to put a clear label on her and she was confusing them. And she said at times she just wished that she was blonde-haired and blue-eyed so she didn't have to deal with it. The problem is that it followed her even into adulthood. She says, "I learned quickly that many people can be ignorant about my culture. With the Asian label comes the inevitable, frustrating, irritating, and degrading stereotypes. I constantly get incredulous looks when I open my mouth and speak perfect English without any accent." And she tells that people assumed that she must be some kind of high-level escort. They called her exotic. People assumed that she would be subservient, quiet. People expected her to have an interest in sciences, law, and medicine. And she says, "I'm not any of that." The labels didn't fit her, and they felt like boxes that made her feel claustrophobic and didn't capture who she really is. And that's the problem with labels. They generalize, they flatten. People who look like this are. Christians are. Buddhists are. Democrats are. And once I've got my labels, well, I don't have to think anymore. I certainly don't have to be curious. And yet, it's curiosity, genuine, kind-hearted curiosity is one of the ways we can slow down the label-making machinery in our minds, to slow it down just enough to be able to look deeper and sense the spiritual truth beyond them. Another article in the series, My Label and Me, Salma El Wardani, half Egyptian, half Irish, Muslim. She tells the story of being on a commuter train headed home after a long, hard day of work in the United Kingdom. And there are two drunk men on the train. And these two men find themselves in a carriage where most of the other passengers are black and brown women. But the men do not experience themselves as a minority. Loud and drunk, they interrupt the other passengers without permission, asking, "Where are you from?" Pointing at the headscarves, they joke about the Taliban. They ask the passengers, "What does ISIS really want?" They use words like terrorist, exotic, foreign. Salma writes, "We get off the train with new names we never asked for, and identities that have been given to us, terrorist, exotic, sinner, extremist, oriental, jihadi, fanatic. I want to tell them that my label is writer, poet, feminist, that those are the names and labels I wear on my chest with pride. Instead, I'm now part of a terrorist group that they are afraid of. and a woman they will fantasize over late at night when the alcohol has dried up and the music has stopped playing. That's the thing with labels, she says. They're wonderful and empowering when you're the one choosing them for yourself. Then they are an opportunity to be a new person, to become a different human, and grow into yourself in a diverse way. When we reduce people with labels, we connect them to communities, and problems that exist in the world. And in so doing, we erase their individuality, their humanity. And when we are doing that, we're dealing with the world of external effects and no longer with the world of the spiritual realm where we are one. And yes, it's a puzzle. It's quite difficult to put together. How is it that we are one when we are so different? Nobody said it was easy. Now, in the book of the month that you heard read from earlier on true inclusion, on page 15, it says, "This is the only hope for humanity. Unless we are willing to do the hard, painful work of sanctifying and reforming ourselves through extending grace and welcome and unconditional love to our friends, our neighbors, and even our enemies, we can never truly be transformed into the people and communities that we are called to be." And then this powerful statement. "As long as the church," and you can substitute the nation, the community, the individual, "as long as the church continues to function in a way that excludes, demonizes, and marginalizes any community, we are pushing ourselves further away from God and perpetuating the dark forces that are at the heart of all our world's problems." Wow. Now the author is placing the responsibility for the world's problems onto a habit. The habit of excluding, demonizing, marginalizing, and today we're adding labeling. And he says that habit is what pushes us further from God in our thinking. So I want to go back to the article I read about Sri Lanka. I want to remember the reminder in it that when tragedy happens, when disagreements arise, when terror strikes, I've got to start with love and kindness. I've got to start with friendship. It's mine, my job to be a good neighbor and to open my doors and to open myself to the suffering of others and to look beyond the label-making machinery of my own mind, to look at one person at a time, because I know that that will bring me closer to God in my thinking. I was talking to Kevin about this, and he's studying to be a therapist and learning about couples therapy, and he reminded me that for couples working with difficulty and arguing, they've got to start with friendship, because friendship is what gives a foundation of safety to disagree, to argue. He reminded me of the old adage, connection before correction. And that reminded me that I have friends on the political right, on the political left, on the political all over. And because I have friendship, I love them. And I'm respectful of them. Even though I may think that their ideas are plain wrong, it's got to be possible for us to disagree. And it will always be the case that we disagree, because we live in the world of physical manifestation where things simply aren't the same ever. Reverend Michelle Senegal, she spoke here a while ago. She is the chair of the Diversity Commission for our whole movement. And she said, "You might ask, how does one live inclusively, transcending boundaries and otherness?" Ernest Holmes, our founder, she says, gave us the answer. "The one who understands the science of mind will be tolerant, kind, and empathetic." Bam. When I am not tolerant, kind, and empathetic, I am not understanding this radical teaching of oneness. And then she advises us, she said, "Expand your circle of inclusion so that it is so big that nothing exists outside of it." How? Well, here's her advice. Go into the world and show people how significant they are instead of how significant you are. How? Well, one way we could begin is by practicing to be kind-hearted, genuinely curious listeners. These are challenging times. There are also amazing times to be alive. Terrible things are happening in our world. And beautiful, awe-inspiring things are happening also. It's the way of things. It's the way of the world. It must include everything. We call it the realm of effects. Because there is a cause, a first cause. There is a spiritual reality beyond it. And our founder said this: what a difference it would make in our human relations if we tried to sense the divine in all things and then adjust our viewpoint to the truth of oneness and consider all people, all beings, our relatives connected through God. I invite you to breathe in and to exhale into a moment of quiet contemplation. And in this quiet, let us call into our awareness all churches, all mosques, all temples, all ashrams, all spiritual centers, and anywhere where people gather to remember the truth of their being. And let us, in our consciousness, consider them kindred spirit, relatives, and to bless them with welcome in our own hearts and thinking. And so it is. I invite you to breathe in deeply and to exhale, letting that movement of breath help us make the transition to our practice, our spiritual practice of giving. It's one of the components of the law of circulation: giving, receiving, gratitude exercises, blessing. And so today, as you give, I invite you to tune in also to the gratitude that we feel for each other and the way we participate together to co-create this beautiful center that is like an oasis for us to come and remember the truth in. Ushers, please stand. And won't you take your gift in your hand and say, "I bless this gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It does amazing work in the world." And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.